This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
It's time for the BallQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on BallQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to the BallQuest Mailbag Podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Austin Price, Rob Lewis, and Brent Hubbs. Big show coming up today, and it's brought to you, as always, by our friends Exterior Home Solutions. If you need a roof, if you need siding, windows, or a garage, you can contact Exterior Home Solutions today. They've been local, they've been trusted since 1999. That free estimate by picking up the phone, giving them a call today at 865-524-5888, or visiting them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. So much getting into today, Brent Hubbs. We've got basketball questions, we've got investigation questions, we've got recruiting questions, we've got football questions, we've got baseball questions. There's truly not a better time than to be over at BallQuest.com and to see all of our coverage than right now in the month of February.
Yeah, we got a crossover month going on. Baseball getting started, obviously. Basketball with a ton to play for. Football starts on March the 18th, and who knows what else comes up this month. It's supposed to be a slow month, but there's nothing slow about Tennessee athletics, that's for sure. So it's a great time to check us out. It's a great time to interact with us and visit with us. You will not be disappointed. So keep listening to this. Keep subscribing. Be a part of the podcast, but also join us over at BallQuest.com.
All right, we'll jump in with a couple here from Athron. First, do you think the hiring of Coach William Inge will help with Polynesian kids moving forward, giving his West Coast experience, Austin?
I mean, I think it sure doesn't hurt. I mean, I guess there's potential there, but I would not say just because, you know, Coach Inge is here that all of a sudden Tennessee's going to be a major player for, you know, half a dozen, you know, Polynesian kids. So, you know, again, I don't think it hurts, you know, and I think it can help. But, again, I don't think that it means that Tennessee's, you know, all of a sudden become this Polynesian pipeline. I know we said that with Jackson Moy and Nico and you know, some other guys, but, you know, Keenan Peely. But, you know, again, I don't think it's – you're going to look up and have half your roster as Polynesian kids.
I'm going to be fascinated to see just how the West Coast in general – how recruiting on the West Coast in general goes, Rob – with the disintegration of the Pac-12, and now you got schools traveling all over the country. I mean, like, if you went to Cal previously, I mean, your parents could watch you play in the state of California four or five times. Now they've got to come watch you play in the ACC. I mean, hey, we got to get that Cal Berkeley to Raleigh travel plan together, you know, on a somewhat regular basis. And then you got the, you know, Oregon and Washington and those schools heading to the Big Ten. I'm curious to see kind of where – California families are in the recruiting process in terms of what staying on the West Coast means now compared to what it meant, you know, 5-10 years ago.
Yeah, I think what's happened in Pac-12 is awful. I mean, and not really so much in football. Because, I mean, it was a long road trip from, you know, USC to Washington or USC to Utah. But, I mean, and we thought, I don't want to get sidetracked on it, but what's going to happen in, like, the secondary sports is ludicrous.
Yep.
I mean, softball, you know, Arizona going, or not Arizona going to the Big 12, but Oregon going to Rutgers to play, you know, to run track is stupid. I mean, and I'll be surprised if that kind of stuff doesn't get walked back.
I wonder, Rob, are they going to be like, because of the academic side of things, do they do this in one big, like, you know, like when UCLA goes east, when those secondary sports go east? Do they go? Are they going like when the, you know, Barnum and Bailey would go to the United Center back in the 90s and the Bulls would be going on their West Coast road trip for 2 weeks or whatever? Like, you know what I mean? Like, do you go for, you know, three or four games at a time and not just for one and then back and then back and then back?
You know what I mean? AP, you got, I mean, again, we're going down a rabbit hole in a UT podcast and something that doesn't matter. You've got two daughters. I mean, if they go to college and they happen to play softball, I mean, you want them to go for 2 weeks to play, you know, Rutgers, Maryland, Ohio State, you know, Penn State, and miss 2 weeks of classes and have a tutor in a conference room at a hotel. Again, we're getting off in the weeds, but I just think that the Pac-12, Big Ten stuff is stupid. I mean, once you get outside of football.
Does the hiring of Darrell Sims open any doors with recruits, AP?
I don't know if it opens any doors with any particular recruits in 25. I think he'll do just fine in recruiting. Having talked to Coach Sims, I think he's a relationship builder. I think he's someone that kids will really enjoy getting to know, will gravitate towards. He's got energy. Like I said, when Hubs and I were breaking it down when they hired him, you know, he wears his faith on his sleeve. He's a guy that I think, you know, when he tells you something, you can take it to the bank. And so, I think that all that will relate well on the recruiting trail.
How bad was the damage that needed to be cleaned up for Deshaun Bishop and his procedure?
I think
anybody know? Say what? Sorry.
He should be fine.
And then, Rob, will Zakai Ziegler get a chance in the league when he's done at UT, or is height going to kill his chances?
We get a chance. I mean, he's going to be an all-SEC point guard 2, maybe 3 years. Yeah, I mean, he'll get a shot. I mean, somebody, G League, Summer League. I mean, yeah, he'll get every opportunity in the world.
Let's go to Pine here. With the new 5+7 playoff format, what is a reasonable expectation for Tennessee getting in the playoffs in the next 10-year window, Brent?
I mean, there's so many variables into that. But obviously, you expect it to be in the playoff in a decade time with where you're at right now and the new format, saying you're going to take the next, you know, the 7 highest ranked teams in the playoff standings after the conference champion. So, I would expect that you would think you could be, I don't want to say a mainstay, like you're going to be there every year or you're going to be there 80% of the time or whatever, but it shouldn't be a one-off that you make the playoff in a 10-year window. It should be better than that with where Tennessee's at right now, their investment in the football, and where Tennessee's NIL program is and everything else. I mean, I think this should be a competitive team in this league year in and year out. And if you're a competitive team in this league year in and year out, then you're going to have a chance to make a playoff.
We'll go to Sam Smith, 2233. A&M manhandled Tennessee on the glass in College Station, and their bigger guards bully Tennessee. What do we see Tennessee do to change that on Saturday night?
I mean, I think that's way over the top. I mean, Tennessee had a bad night, but I mean, Texas A&M, I mean, they bullied, you know, people all year long. I mean, they've lost 3 games in a row, including one to Vanderbilt. I mean, I think you'll see Tennessee play better defense than they did at Texas A&M. Keep the ball in front of them better than they did at Texas A&M. And I mean, I'll be really surprised if Tennessee doesn't win that game handedly.
Well, A&M's strength is on the glass. I mean, they're the best. I mean, they're one of the best rebounding teams. They're going to rebound the basketball.
And Garcia is the best rebounder in the country.
Right. I mean, they're legit there. So the question, Rob, is because of the guards and what they did, and obviously Tennessee's going to have a counter and they'll play better and all those things. Do we see the Jonas Adu, Tobe Awaka, you know, on the floor at the same time against A&M? Is that doable in that matchup? Do you think that matchup favors that type of lineup or no?
Honestly, we talked about this a little bit on the pod after the game at Missouri Hubbard. I honestly, this is just me and I could be wrong talking about it, you know, 3 days before the game. I think that's more about Josiah than the matchup. I mean, I think if Rick's loving Josiah, then I think he stays with the normal look. I mean, Josiah only played 6 minutes in the second half at Missouri. And I mean, I think part of that's matchup, but I mean, Josiah averages 6-7 rebounds a game. It's not like he can't handle his business on the glass in the SEC. So, I mean, Tobey's a better rebounder, no question, but it's not like you're taking out, you know, a 6'2", you know, guard and putting Tobey in. I mean, I'm not trying to be critical of Josiah, but I mean, I think a lot of that Tuesday night at Missouri was about Josiah as more than just let's go big. I mean, because it's not like you're taking out, you know, a 6'2 guy. I mean, you're taking out a 6'6", 210, 215-pound forward. So, I mean,
it looked good though.
It looked great. I mean, it looked fantastic. But I mean, Tobey is going to do that if you give Tobey minutes. But you're just not going to run as much. And so, I mean, I honestly, again, I've said it three times now. I think that's a Josiah thing more than it is a matchup thing. And I think Rick didn't want to play Josiah Tuesday night at Missouri.
This one's for me. Kane, do you think Aaron Combs has what it takes to be stretched out and be a long guy in the bullpen, or is he going to be a 3-6-out guy? Also very impressed with Little Hundley on Tuesday. Do you think we see him get some run on the weekends? I looked at the timestamp of this one from Sam Smith, and this was before the Tuesday game. So was your strategy, if he didn't do well, to go back and delete that part? Because you posted this before Austin Hundley pitched. As far as Hundley, we'll see. I mean, he was never in the bullpen, never in my thought process for the Tennessee bullpen on weekends. First appearance was last night, and he looked really good. So he'll continue to get some opportunities and maybe some on the weekend and some of these blowouts, you know, against some non-conference foes. But we'll see. He was not even in my thought process before last night, but he looked good. As far as Aaron Combs, I would say 6 to I bet he could go 9. I mean, it was the first appearance of the season. I do think he kind of ran out of gas. I don't think that means that he can't go 3 innings strong if they needed him to. He was wanting to start this year, and Tennessee never really entertained that. But I think he's good anywhere from 3 to 9. I wouldn't go past 9, maybe 3 to 8. But Aaron Combs looked really good on Saturday before he ran out of gas. Unfortunately, he ran out of gas, but I thought he looked really, really good in that matchup. And he's going to be a guy that Tennessee counts on. We'll go to Golf Nut 1941. Austin, this one's all you, my man. Do all players on the football team have an NIL deal, or is this only for a select few? And if you know, how much do starting offensive linemen get versus defensive linemen versus defensive backs? How about receivers, running backs, and linebackers? Any idea, just a range if you know.
No, not everybody gets paid. It's more than just a select few. You know, I think, you know, when you look at kind of how it, you know, it's sprinkled out from a money standpoint, you know, at the end of the day, much like the NFL, Hubber, it's going to be quarterback, the guys that protect the quarterback, and the guys that can get to the quarterback. Those guys are going to command more money than others, you know, and a lot of that is because they're going to make more plays and they're going to be able to, you know, be a little more marketable out there. If we want to put this in a marketing, put a, you know, spot on the marketing side of things and not just the, you know, hey, they play here, let's give them an NIL money. And so, like, yeah, I mean, you know, there are players at probably every position that make a nice chunk of money, and there are backups that don't make as much but still get paid. So, you know, again, I think each situation is different.
Yeah, and I, you know, I think the most valuable players on your team, you know, are the guys who are in position to also make the most money, right? I mean, like, right. your better players are going to make the most money. Now, there are also some positions that aren't going to command as much money. We've talked about this. Offensive guards are generally not going to be, you know, make as much money as offensive tackles make. Now, there's exceptions to every rule, and all those things come into play. There's no absolutes. But when you look at it, there are certain positions, as Austin mentioned, Eric, that just command more money because of their value to the game and their impact on the game. It's not to say those other positions don't count, but, you know, it's very much like the NFL model in terms of where the position values are.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't say it any better myself. It's the quarterback, the guy that protects the quarterback on the edge, and the guy that gets after the quarterback. Also, sometimes you'll see, and you see this in NFL free agency as well, like big-time receivers that go make plays. Well, last couple of years, Tennessee's had a need at wide receiver. So you're willing to go and, like, Tennessee had a need at tight end, receiver, offensive tackle. Maybe you're willing to go and pay more to get that guy on your roster compared to maybe a normal year. And so I think you'll, you know, you've seen that and you'll continue to see that in the transfer portal window. Let's go to Brandon_SV. Was Coach Inge going to be strictly a linebackers coach at Alabama after being co-DC under DePore at Washington? What do you think the attraction is to Tennessee if there isn't a promotion?
You know, I think none of us will ever know what he was actually promised at Alabama or the thought process was there. In my opinion, Hubs, he was probably going as an outside linebackers coach because Kane Womack coaches the inside backers. And Kane Womack is the defense coordinator. I don't believe he was going to get a title at Alabama. And so, thus, you know, I don't know what his title is going to be here as of this taping on Wednesday. They've not released that. You know, so I think a lot of it, you know, we'll see what happens, what comes out with. Maybe he gets title, maybe he doesn't. But I think ultimately, you know, the ability to have to coach outside backers versus inside backers, probably the lack of a title that he had at Washington that he wasn't going to have at Alabama, more than likely, probably lends itself there. But again, nobody truly knows.
Another one here from Brandon. You've referred to Banks as needing a right-hand man after losing Brian Jean-Marie. Does that mean, does that speak to the lack of comfort, trust between Banks, Eckler, Garner, and Martinez?
I don't think it speaks to a lack of trust. I think that it's just, you have guys that you that tie things together, right? So Banks has got the safeties and he's tying the pass defense. He's tying the safeties and the back end of the defense into the run game, and you want to tie all of that together. And I think Brian Jean-Marie's a guy who helped Tim Banks tie it together greatly. That doesn't mean Rodney Garner can't. Rodney Garner's a 30-year veteran of coaching defensive line, who's never been a linebacker's coach. He's never been a co-defensive coordinator. He is a technician coaching defensive lineman. And that's where he is. Willie Martinez has been a coordinator, but he's a back-end guy, right? I mean, so I think it's more of a right-hand guy who can help you in the front seven, tie things in, you know, to the back end, eyes on the field, big picture type stuff. I think that's some of the things that Brian Jean-Marie did for Tim Banks. And I think that's why this was Tim Banks' hire, and it was an important hire for him.
Well, and to that point, BJ was the lone hire by Tim Banks the first time around. You know, I mean, you go back to the first set. I mean, Eckler, you know, hype did that. You know, Rodney was already here. Willie was already here. I mean, you know, BJ was Tim's hire. And so, like, I think it was important for Tim to have a huge say in, you know, who they brought in this time around as well.
I mean, to put it in simple terms, you know, going off what Brent was saying, I mean, a linebacker plays the run. A linebacker plays the pass. A linebacker plays in the middle of the defense. A linebacker calls the defense. A lot of times your linebacker is your defensive captain. I mean, doesn't mean that the other assistant coaches that coach in the back end or the front end aren't capable of being a right-hand man or a co-DC. It's just, it's the nature of the position. And so, I would completely agree with that.
And BJ did a fantastic job with not just the linebackers, it really the entire team, you know, as far as like a lot of those players on that team gravitated towards him. You know, he was, you know, universally respected in that building of offense, defense, didn't matter what position you played.
All right, we got a couple more questions we're going to get into here today on this Thursday edition of the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. But first, a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
It's one of those phone calls that you hate to get from your kids. Hey, Dad, a tree fell on my house. Well, we got that call a couple of weeks back from our daughter at her house here. And the first call that I made was to Exterior Home Solutions. The peace of mind that they gave me and us as a family when they came out here and came up with a plan, got us connected with the right people, is absolutely priceless. Use the same people that I use. In that time of need, Exterior Home Solutions.
This is not the sound of a stream running through the mountains. It's water from a leaking pipe trickling down a stairway. That's not a frog splashing into a lake. It's a piece of sheetrock falling into a puddle on a kitchen floor. And that's not a hiker taking a deep breath of mountain air. It's a homeowner gasping at the sight of a $12,000 water damage repair bill. 40% of homeowners have experienced water damage. Protect your home with the Moen Smart Water Monitor and Shutoff. Moen.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
AP, I heard we're getting some new Exterior Home Solutions commercials. Can't wait to see them, but I'm going to miss Hubs on the Roof, man. I mean, I don't understand.
We don't have to retire it. It's evergreen. We just don't have to put it in rotation as much. We don't have to retire it. And we don't have to retire my point either.
can't lose your point. I mean, it's very Uncle Samish of you. Exterior Home Solutions for yes. We can give them a call today, 865-524-5888. Really do appreciate all the hard work that Exterior Home Solutions does for you and for us here on the VolQuest podcast. Let's continue on here with Nashfall 615. Where would you rank Tennessee's assistant coaching staff in the SEC? Kind of a hard question because there's so many teams, but middle of the pack, back of the pack, whereabouts would you think the Tennessee's coaching staff outside of your head coach kind of ranks?
I haven't sat down and looked at everybody. I mean, Tennessee's obviously had stability. You look at the stats and where they've been offensively, it's hard to say that their offensive staff is not one of the better offensive staffs in the country, even though they took a step back last year. Now, you look pretty good depending on how you guys play, right? If you get much improved quarterback play, suddenly Joey Halsley looks like he's the genius again, right? Whereas it was how much they miss Alex Golish and this, that, and the other. And I do think they miss Golish, but part of it is about what you're playing with and what kind of success you have with those guys. I think this staff is plenty capable of being a playoff staff who could make a run, you know, at a championship in the league and all those types of things. Now, you're bringing in two new guys. We'll see how they all mix and marry together. And you've had more turnover, Austin, than you probably anticipated having. And so you got some adjustments there. We'll see how this staff adjusts to that, because that's always a factor and something that always plays into it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've had, you know, obviously two guys leave. One went for a lateral move at Michigan. One went to the NFL. You know, you had also two others that, you know, SEC rivals that you compete against on the recruiting trail, that you compete against on the field, tried to go and hire away from you, and Rodney Garner and Kelsey Pope. So, I mean, you know, I think that just speaks to, you know, the quality of the staff. I think it also speaks to the fact that, you know, Josh Heupel's had it nice the first few years because he hadn't had a whole lot of people coming after his guys. And all of a sudden now, you know, he feels like he's dodging bullets. You know, he's you know, moving that head left and right, trying to you know, keep from, you know, getting hit. So I think it's just the nature of an off season that, you know, really he hadn't had to have to this point.
Yeah, and I think you also factor in bringing in two new teams into the league. I mean, where Texas is at right now, I mean, I think they vault right near the top of the SEC with what they have going on and where their program is. You know, I don't know what Oklahoma's going to be in their adjustment into this league. You got some other coaches who, you know, I mean, Levy's just getting started at Mississippi State. Billy Napier looks like he's in trouble at Florida, right? So, I mean, it's fluid. It changes all the time. And again, a lot of it depends on what you have to play with, you know. You could argue Tennessee's best coaching job was year one, okay? In some cases, you could argue that they did a really good job last year to get to the record that they had. That's not what fans want to hear, you know, but it was probably a little easier in 22, right, when you had the toys you had to play with on the offensive side of the ball. That's why you were the, you know, best offense in the country. Doesn't mean you necessarily coach better. It just means you had more toys in the garage to be successful with.
Jimmy's and Joe's do make a difference. I think that is something if you didn't believe that before, you definitely learned it this past year. Another one here from Nashville 615. Which three recruits does Tennessee need to land in 2025 to ensure a top 10 recruiting class?
I love these. You know, I mean, I think you've got to have some combination on the offensive line. Sure, David Sanders would definitely put you in that mix, right? But if you don't, let's say you don't land David Sanders, then you got to land a Jalen Matthews or a Juan Gaston. You've got to land some combination of guys on the offensive line. And you've got to land, you know, Cam Sparks. Tennessee continues to be in a really good spot there. Re'Darius Jackson, he's going to go flying up the rankings, in my opinion, over the course of the next several rankings, unveils. And so I think it just boils down to, you know, taking care of guys that you know you're in a pretty good spot with, whether that's some of these linemen, some of these in-state kids, you know, and then try to cherry pick in a Marcus Harris from Modern Day or a Caleb Cunningham from Mississippi or, you know, the linebacker, you know, Jaden Harmon from North Georgia, from Rome, plays for former Alcoa coach John Reed. You know, you've got to, you know, in your footprint and then cherry pick outside of it.
Let's go to Reltney for Life. How active do you see Tennessee going in the portal for help this offseason? What would the positions of need be? Rob, I feel like Tennessee is always going to be active in the transfer portal, because if you're not active in the transfer portal in this climate in college football, you're getting left behind. Line of scrimmage for sure. You're losing defensive linemen. You're losing some offensive linemen. I would say line of scrimmage. And then, you know, I mean, Tennessee's there's a secondary guy out there available. I mean, if there's a
playmaker
out there available.
We're talking about after spring practice?
I mean, I would imagine the way I read it was next offseason.
Oh, golly. I mean,
oh, no, no. It says this offseason. This offseason.
I mean, if it's next offseason, I got no idea.
How do you know?
I have no idea what any of these guys look like.
If it's spring, I think you have to wait until after spring.
I was going
to
say, you hope you're not looking for a receiver after spring practice. I mean, you really hope.
You have room.
That's what I'm saying. If you're looking for guys after spring practice at this point, and you know, going into year four, then you know you've probably had some bad, you know, not horrible stuff happen, but I mean, I don't think there's any glaring holes going into spring, is there?
Like going in the 2021 season, Brent, like I felt like Tennessee took three or four guys post spring, but you had to, right? Because where you were in the roster, like Rob's saying, you're not going to be in a position to probably do that this go around.
Here's where I am in spring evaluations. If your program is established and got firm footing, if there's a great player out there that you think can make a difference for you, that and you've got a spot and you want to go recruit, you know, you want to go look at that guy, that's fine. If you're sitting here at the end of spring going, hey, we've got to have six or eight more guys, then you got bigger things to worry about. I don't think that's where Tennessee is. Now, I mean, who knows? I mean, Austin, I mean, if you have one position that has two or three guys leave you at the end of spring practice for some reason, does that change things? I mean, potentially. I mean, I just think you have to wait and see what this thing looks like next month before you know if you what kind of needs you have versus just wish list. Hey, if this guy came available, would you kick the tires there? Okay, maybe, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you. Like running back. Like right now I would tell you they're not going to add a running back. But Peyton Lewis isn't going to go through spring practice. So you don't know what you have in hand. And, you know, if Khalifa Keith, you know, or whoever takes a step back and all of a sudden you go, you know, we're not really deep there and we don't know what we have in Peyton Lewis. We think he's good, but we don't know because he missed. They may be forced to go add somebody. But I'm with Hubs. Like, if you don't have to add somebody, don't do it. Because normally these after spring ads or summer ads are just – they never pan out. The only one I can think of that's panned out really, really well, you know – is Kamal Haddon. Technically, Brew arrived after spring, but I don't count him. He went in the portal, you know, in December or whatever it was. And
you recorded that commitment update in January.
Yeah. But like Kamal Haddon went to Auburn for spring and then ended up going back in the portal and leaving again and coming to Tennessee. I thought that was, you know, that was a nice addition. Outside of that, it's been a lot of swing and a miss when you add these kids.
If you're going into spring practice with needs in the portal, then you're not thinking about the college football playoff.
What changes, if any, has UT made with NIL and the seeming changes NCAA is attempting to implement? Changing the rules as you go. What changes, how has Tennessee adapted to the NIL climate, I guess is a good way to phrase it, AP?
I still don't understand the question. Like,
what changes, if any, has UT made with NIL and the seeming changes the NCAA is attempting to implement?
Is Tennessee's Spire's work any different now than it was a year ago?
No.
In terms of how they're going about business?
Nope. I mean, it's no different. I mean, like the same. I mean, like they're, you know, they attack it the same way, just like every other, you know, collective out there. You know, so I mean, it's nothing's changed a whole lot. I mean, has it changed since 2021 when it first got, you know, stuff when NIL went into effect? Yeah, I mean, they've altered, you know, how they do some things, but you know, I don't think that the overall process has changed a whole lot, especially in the last year and a half.
I don't know if anybody even wants to attempt this one, but Volume Shooter says with the new coaches officially locked in, power rank the positional coaches according to their importance to the program.
No.
Well, I mean, I think you start with coordinators because both your coordinators are coaching positions. Okay. I mean, so I think Tim Banks is important to the defense because they have established an identity on defense, which nobody knew what their identity was going to be when they've gotten here. And so they've gotten better every year with that identity. So he went on to say, you know, in my mind, that means the importance of continuity at their position, coach's ability to motivate, teach, coach's ability to recruit, ability to game plan, contribute, and other staff duties. Start with Tim Banks because everything that happens defensively from a game plan standpoint stems out of his system. So, I mean, you're going to put your coordinators at a higher – on defense, you're going to put your coordinators at a higher place, not necessarily on offense because it's Josh Heupel's system as the head coach. But defensively, I think, you know, the foundation of who you are is what Tim Banks has built and created.
So under that logic, he goes on to say, who would it hurt to lose the most? Be Tim Banks.
To me, it would be because now I'm not saying you can't get better or you couldn't end up being better. But Austin, if you scrap what you're doing defensively and put in a new defensive system, there's going to be a step back before you grow because it just, I mean, you've recruited for multiple years to this style of play. And so from that standpoint, to me, a coordinator is always going to be particularly a coordinator who is opposite of the head coach's expertise is going to be of the extreme value.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I think that's, you know, while there has been a little bit of change the last few years, you know, the continuity is, you know, the fact that you have Josh Heupel's offense and Tim Banks' defense, and those two figureheads have been there the entire time. And so, like, you can lose, you know, a Cody Burns and put in a Kelsey Pope, and it does not change a whole lot. You can lose a Jerry Mack and bring in Darrell Sims or whoever, right? And it ultimately it doesn't shift it drastically. Personality might maybe changes in the room specific, but I think Hubs hits the nail on the head. I would start with Tim Banks. That doesn't diminish Joey Halsley because I do think what he's done with the quarterback position has been really, really impressive. And then you know we'll see what happens as he goes into year two. I said the whole time, if you had Golish calling plays with Joe and Halsley calling plays with Hendon, how does it look? Nobody knows. Nobody knows how it would have looked if we'd have flipped this a year ago. So, like, let's see what happens when Joey's calling plays for Nico.
Another question here from Volume Shooter. Is the Vol's biggest baseball weakness starting pitching behind Russell and Beam? If Sechrist doesn't work out, who does Vitello hand the ball to on Sundays next? I would say that's the biggest weakness right now. I mean, you're four games into the season, so it's very small sample size. Tennessee, again, needs to hit better with runners on base, and it's been a little bit inconsistent on the offensive end through four games. But for the most part, I mean, you like what you have on Friday nights. You know what you got on Saturday nights with Drew Beam, and the question is Sunday. Now, the way this week plays out with the other midweek game, we'll see. I mean, long-term, I think Matthew Dallas / Derek Schaefer, one of those freshmen, are going to be your Sunday starter. In the immediate, considering Schaefer started yesterday, and I believe that Matthew Dallas will start this Wednesday game as we record this before the game. You know, if you don't go with Xander, maybe Nate Snead gets that start, or maybe they just go straight bullpen. I don't have the answer to that right now. Hopefully I do before the war room. And also, it wouldn't shock me whatsoever if Xander Sechrist gets another start. I mean, you're playing Albany this weekend. They won 9 games last year. So it wouldn't shock me whatsoever if Xander gets another start this weekend. But long-term, I don't believe it's going to be Xander, and I think starting-wise, it's going to be one of those freshmen. But A.J. Causey can start. You don't want him to, but he can. Nate Snead can start, and you got some options.
Do we not think this is a bit of a knee-jerk from the general's quarters, which is no shock whatsoever? I mean, like he started one game. I mean, like, it's not like we're a month into the season. He's got 4 or 5 starts, and he's struggled, right? I mean, he played one game. It's like my wife going to a restaurant, and she didn't like her food, and then we never go back again. Maybe the cook was off that night, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what are we doing here? Like, I mean, like, it's one game.
The biggest thing. Here,
tell me if I'm wrong, Kane. Like, I will gladly eat it if I'm wrong. But it was one game. I know he pitched last year in the midweek games, but it's one game.
No, I hear you. I mean, I completely hear you. I mean, it's one start. I mean, he pitched 45 pitches. Again, I think long-term, he's not the guy. But you're right. It's one game. It's not like they're just going to give up on him. And I think, you know, with pitching, with hitting and everything, I mean, Blake Burke was a topic of conversation over opening weekend big time. I mean, baseball is such a marathon. I mean, Mike Trout, the greatest player in the world, is going to go through an over 10 stretch where he strikes out 6 times. That happens. I mean, it's a marathon with anything. So, I mean, I agree with you, AP. Let's go to Dalval 5. Do you think there's an appetite for the league to fix the timing of the SEC basketball and baseball tournaments, even if it's just to move it up a day or two?
I mean, I just don't. I mean, people. I want to talk, Hubbard. I don't think it matters. I mean, that much. Do you? I mean, I could be. I mean, I just moving the SEC tournament championship game up 24 hours is not going to have some dramatic impact on the NCAA tournament.
Well, it's not going to do anything but help, though. Can we agree with that? It might not help a lot, but it's not going to hurt you.
Minimal. So, I mean, it's going to be like you setting your alarm 5 minutes early, Eric.
No, that helps.
It's a big nothing burger to me.
I think what it does, Rob, and again, correct me if I'm wrong. I think what it does for the specific tournament, it makes the teams that get the bye even stronger, because now you're talking about bumping up that first round of games a day. So they're going to have less rest between the final regular season game and that first round of the tournament. Am I wrong?
I mean, no, you're not. But it's like setting your alarm 5 minutes earlier, AP. It's just not a big deal to me. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, and here's the thing we don't know. Okay. Cause this stems from the fact that the Sunday game is of no importance for seeding purposes in the NCAA tournament. And I think much of the tournament seeding is done before Saturday, right?
Way before.
We just had an announcement last week of the top 16 teams. Like, they're, you know, bracketology, we're throwing this stuff out all year long. It's not like it used to be in terms of everybody crunching numbers and figuring this stuff out. So, could it mean somebody is a three instead of a four if they won, or somebody's a seven instead of a six if they win on Sunday and you don't have that opportunity, or they don't look at that as much? Maybe, you know, but I don't know that anybody can say that they lost the NCAA tournament because of the seeding. They got a bad seeding based on the fact they played a game on Sunday. You know, that said, I think most coaches would like to play it on Saturday because it gives you an extra day of rest, you know, going into the NCAA tournament and a travel standpoint and everything else. So I think if you polled the college coaches in the SEC, they would love to move it, not for seating purposes, but for travel and rest and everything else. Because if you're in that game and you get home Sunday night and then you play on the West Coast on Thursday, you got a pretty quick turnaround to get out of Dodge. An extra day might be better for some people. So, you know, I think most coaches would like that from that standpoint. The baseball tournament. Go ahead, Rob.
I was just saying, it's like setting your alarm 5 minutes early. I mean, what you're talking about, that affects two teams out of getting ready to be 16 in the league.
Brent, I don't know if you were going to say this, but the baseball tournament, you literally can't move it a day because you play on that Sunday. So if you move it up a day, you got teams playing Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Like, you can't do that. You got to have it at least because you start on a Tuesday. You got to have at least one off day in there.
Unless you change that last weekend of the regular season to Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Which some do. Yeah, I think Tennessee might have played on a Thursday last week. So, yeah, you're on to something there. Maybe make it league-wide.
Here's the problem with the SEC baseball tournament. One, you have weather issues every year. Every year. They rain, storm, something. They never play that game or that tournament on time. There's delays every year. There has been since it's just the weather. It's the weather pattern. It's the way it is. Secondly, Eric, I don't think the SEC baseball coaches give two rats rear ends about the SEC baseball tournament.
I agree.
I think they would much rather rest arms. You know, hey, we lost on day one or day two. Good. Let's get to the house and get a bullpen session and get our arms back ready to go and get ready for regional play. I just don't think anybody sees the value in that across the board unless you're really on the bubble. And I don't know how many teams have played their way into the regional field because of what they've done in the SEC tournament.
Like Tennessee was out of the picture when they were 5-10 in conference. They got to the 14-win plateau, which is very much on the bubble to where a team like Tennessee would probably get in. You won that 15th conference game. You won your 16th conference game. It's like, lose Tuesday. All right, let's go to the house. We're in no matter what. Let's rest. Let's get our pitching lined up. Losing Tuesday in Hoover last year, though it's frustrating for fans, though it's frustrating in the moment because you're a competitor, you don't want to lose, it's a blessing. That team went to Omaha, you know?
What you can't see is if you flip Hubs' camera around, he's got the big board there. It's the Farmer's Almanac. So he loves talking weather patterns. And you ought to try to book around to golf with Hubs. He'll be like, man, there's a 10% chance of rain, AP. I just, you know, it's going to rain, you know, half an inch at, you know, 11:37. Can't play at 12:13.
Hey, I'm bothered by the weather like you are right now by the fact that you're about 15 minutes away from being past your lunchtime you know, and things are getting off the ground. So Eric's got to get the last two questions in here so we can get to your lunch schedule.
Hey, listen. I know you're going to try to fire me. You try to fire everybody. Just understand. The only person that can make hirings and firings at VolQuest is Matt Ray. He's the only person that can get somebody fired. I've heard that with my own ears.
Well, and Eric Kane runs the Mailbag Podcast also.
Say it like you said it yesterday, Rob. All right, this will be a fun one. Let's end on this one and just have some fun with it. I miss Denarius Moore. Can you give us a top five ranking of position coaches over your time covering UT? Who really stands out over the last couple of decades? Maybe not one, two, three, four, five, but who's five or six names that just come to mind about assistant coaches that you've enjoyed working with who are really good here at Tennessee?
I'm going to steal Hubbard's thunder because he's still running the role. The best assistant coach I've seen here is David Cutcliffe. I don't think you could argue with that.
No, and listen, I mean, part of this when you do these things is about the relationships you have with guys too.
Yep.
Right. And working with them. And for David, I mean, David was a guy who took a lot of time to talk football. You know, I really got to know David extremely well the year he took off. And we did the old VolQuest feature Cutting It Up with Cut, which was a weekly Q&A about, you know, things back before you're doing video breakdowns and stuff like that. And I just learned a lot of football. So selfishly, I mean, you know, David's a guy who I'm friends with, still remain friends with, and I will always appreciate, you know, what he did to help me, but also for what he did as a football coach. I mean, his attention to detail was terrific. So, you know, I would put him up there. I think Justin Wilcox was a blast to cover. I mean, that's another guy who was very engaging, would talk a lot of football with you and would explain a lot of things. And, you know, he was the last one to leave the practice field because we were all standing around trying to figure out why he was doing this or doing that. So, I mean, he was a great guy to deal with as well. Coach Garner, I've known for forever. I mean, I can go on. I mean, I've been around way too long and seen way too many of them come and go, AP.
Well, as far as pure just impact on a room, I would tell you Trooper Taylor. I mean, you know, even he flipped positions. I thought he did a really good job of getting guys to buy in to development. I'm a big Jerry Mack guy. I think Jerry Mack just gets it. There's a reason I think that dude will be a head coach somewhere sometime. I think he'll do fantastic in the NFL. And, he just gets people. Like, he was never too high, never too low. If they fumbled, okay, next. If they ran an 80-yard touchdown, okay, next. Like, I mean, it was, you know, I think he's got a lot of great qualities to him. That's a guy in the more recent time.
Well, and I'll tell you another guy too, that when you first, I wasn't sure, like, was this stage too big for him, or I'm not sure, you know, how it really fits or whatever. I mean, Zach Azani your initial reaction to Zach was, okay, I mean, you know, is he an SEC guy? I mean, Zach Azani is a really good football coach and a really good dude. Sam Pittman, Rob, was here for a hot minute, but I mean, he was a great guy to do. I mean, there's been a lot of really good guys coming.
You weren't surprised when Sam Pittman left here and did it, you know, one of the best assistant coaches in the country at Georgia.
Yeah. No,
not remotely surprised.
Not a shock at all.
Good questions as always. Appreciate you guys for submitting these over here to the VolQuest podcast. We do the mailbag portion every Thursday, and we do it thanks to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. They've been local and trusted since 1999. If you have a need, these spring storms coming up, a lot of wind, if you have any damage or just want some renovations, garage, roofing, siding, windows, whatever the case may be, give them a call today at 865-524-5888. They'll give you a free estimate. You can visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. And they've been local, trusted since 1999. You can trust them with your project as well. What's the weather looking like?
It's a good day tomorrow to put out tomato plants, AP. The almanac says it's time to go. So it's got a little gardening work.
I'll let Craig and Sherry know.
Waiting. Eric, we know what Hubbard and AP will be doing tomorrow.
We won't be there, will we?
I'm going to hit golf balls. I hit them yesterday. I'm going to hit them again today. I'm going to hit them tomorrow.
Got lunch to get you to first, so let's get out of here. For Austin Fries, Brent Hubbs, Rob Lewis, I am Eric Kane. Thank you, as always, for joining us here on the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.